Did you know that there are over 200 legends like Andrew Jones, Albert Pujols, Felix Hernandez, and Ken Griffey Jr. in MLB The Show 26? Collect them all and current all-stars to build your perfect lineup. MLB The Show 26 is available now on PlayStation 5, Xbox Series XS, and Nintendo Switch. Rated E for everyone. Officially licensed by MLB Players, Inc.
Looking for something smart, soulful, and full of heart? I'm Jen Hatmaker, host of For the Love, the podcast where we talk about what really matters. Love and family, faith and purpose. Every week, I'm joined by incredible guests for honest conversations that invite all of us to live with more intention, more laughter, and more connection. Join us on For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.
Miss college football.
Jenty, his first touch. And typical Ashton Jenty. Look at him go! You can't bring him down! Is he? Yes, he will!
We can't wait for the 2025 season.
Oh, Howard with third and 11. He'll throw it. He's going for it. Jeremiah Smith, one-on-one. Game, set, match. Whenever you needed it, you got it. Will Howard to Jeremiah.
And we're counting down the days to kickoff.
Are we there yet?
No.
Are we there yet?
I said no.
Are we there yet?
What's wrong with your ears?
Here is your college football fix, only on the Zach Gelb Show.
SEC Media Days underway. We'll talk a little Oklahoma right now. Also look across the entire lay of the land in the SEC with one of our favorites, Chris Plank, who does a great job on the Sooner Sports Network. And Chris is kind enough to join us right now. Chris, I know it's been a while, but how you been, my friend?
Good, busy. You know, it's weird, Zach. I know you've dealt with the media days, and I'm actually not in Atlanta this week. And the dread of going to me, like the travel, for a long time with the Big 12, it was a drive. You're like, oh, I don't want to drive there. I don't want to go check into the hotel. And you don't go. And so you're like, okay, that's great. I don't have to deal with that stress. But as soon as media day starts, Zach, it's FOMO. Like, it's just I'm missing out on everything. And it's an awesome setting to see what's going on down in Atlanta right now. I got buddies that are texting like, where are you? How can you not be here? And I'm like, I am mowing because my life is hell. And I have two kids that demand a lot of summer attention. But no, it's here. I mean, we're getting close to that 30-day mark in college football. And this is a true sign that we are on our way. And I can't wait.
Now, hold on, Chris Plank. You're a star. You make good money. You can't have someone cut the grass for you.
Well, here's the problem. Zach, this whole summer has been a hell so far. Mower broke. Sewage backups, everything that could go wrong in the Plank household has gone wrong. So to ensure that my late August, September, October, November, and December is untethered, I'm going ahead and taking care of everything now. So I'll trade talking with you to being there in Atlanta because it's fun, man. There's so many storylines, it's wild. But I am definitely my own worst enemy this summer, man.
Well, in your crappy situation, I try to find the positives here. So maybe you have to go through all this hell in order to assure that Oklahoma has a great season this year. That's why
I'll trade it all in. I'll trade it all in for the Sooners to have a good season. Now, if he could slide in a good year from Geno Smith and my Raiders, that'd be a little bit better. But that might be asking too much for the big man upstairs. But, yeah, and you know what? It's funny not to, like, just completely dive into the topic, Zach, but I think you know this more than anyone. Brent Venables needs it. You know, he needs it badly for Oklahoma, not just for the program, but for himself too.
Yeah, and that's the thing for me. I thought Venables was a home run hire, slam dunk, right? We all saw what he did at Clemson, clearly the familiarity with Oklahoma from previous times there. And then, you know, outside of that, he had that 10-win season, but sandwiched in between were two 6-win seasons. This is go time. Anything short of them making the college football playoff, especially with Texas coming over, having that immediate success in the SEC, that's a failover season for Oklahoma this year.
Yeah, and I'm here to tell you that I am a complete, not a bash, Brent Venables homer. So as long as I say I lose all objectivity, I think you guys can't hold it against me. I still think it's a home run hire, and I still think he's going to be a great head coach. But there's a lot of things that are very interesting that have happened here in Norman just over the last, you know, 4 months since the season came to an end. They brought in Randall Stephenson. Randall Stephenson, you know, does not have a background in college sports, but was a business guy, ran AT&T, is on the Walmart board. brilliant businessman, and he became the head of football. You know, it's just kind of unique, right, to have a guy with no real true football background, and he took that over and didn't take a salary. And then immediately they got what I kind of consider to be one of the best hires of the offseason in Jim Nagy to come in and be their general manager and pretty much run the personnel and a majority of the football office. So, and then Joe Castiglione announces that he's going to retire at the end of this year and then serve it as an emeritus role for the next two. So it's just, you know, I'm a big Brent Venables believer. I think he's going to win here, and I think Oklahoma is going to be okay. But you look at all these things that have happened, and it is wild how different of a job it is now from the one that he took just three, now four seasons ago.
And with all those changes, this not being a success so far, I know he just got a contract extension a year ago, but does he enter this season on the hot seat, or is that just radio talk for us?
No. I think he would tell you that. In fact, you know, he was asked that in the spring, and I thought it was a great answer. And he's like, you guys might not believe this, but I've had myself fighting for my job every single year. And I believe him when he says that, Zach. I don't think it's like some BS that he's selling you. If you watch him, he is an absolute lunatic. And I mean that in the most glowing way possible, right? He is a crazy person that loves football, but you know, they got to win. And nobody knows that more than Brent Venables. And it's kind of wild to think that the thing that let them down last year, given the recent history of Oklahoma, was their offense. You bring in Ben Arbuckle, very young, talented offensive coordinator. You bring in John Mateer, who has done everything you want a quarterback to do since he got here. Now let's see what he does on the field. Rebuilt your receiver room. Bring in Jay Knott. Got a whole new offensive line. So, you know, it's really going to be an interesting year. You know, defense is going to be good. It's going to be a Brent Venables defense. But if that offense is just a skosh better, Zach, I think they got a chance to be pretty special this year. I really do.
All right, when we stay in the SEC, I wasn't expecting to be talking about Nick Saban today, but then I see that Greg McElroy says, and I like Greg a lot, and I trust him, obviously. He talked to someone in the know that said Saban will be returning to coaching. I would still be surprised if Saban ever is coaching again in college. I think if he does make a return, it would be to the NFL, but give me your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I was blown away by it, and it's interesting because I like Greg too. Greg's one of my guys, but whenever he laid out his report, he had Paul Feinbaum there with him, and then both of them proceeded to completely dump all over the report. It was the wildest thing I've ever seen. They jump on, like, yeah, I'm hearing from people, good sources, that Nick Saban wants to coach again, and then immediately, like, that becomes the headline. Nick Saban wants to coach again, and then immediately Greg curbs it with, but I'm not buying it. It's like, well, are you reporting this? Are you saying he's coming back or not? You know, I've been blessed to be around Bob Stoops, and Bob Stoops is a guy that when he retired early, he retired relatively young, and a lot of people always thought he was going to come back. Well, he didn't come back until a very low-pressure XFL, UFL, USFL situation, right? I can't buy it. It seems like Nick Saban's in that Bob Stoops mold where he's really enjoying retirement. He's really having fun with it. So, you know, unless there is a job that Nick Saban looked at and said, I want that job. And there's several with guys that are on the hot seat. USC is an interesting place. You know, Wisconsin's an interesting place. Oklahoma's an interesting place, right? Zach, what was your read on it? Because I just can't buy it that a guy that seems to be enjoying retirement this much would want to get back in this model with as crazy it is. But then I would kind of think, you might have a GM that if you come back, you could truly coach. You got someone that can worry about all the negotiating and the money side of it. It seems as if it might be settling down a bit, but I just can't buy that he would want to come back to coach with how much fun it appears he's having in broadcasting and golfing.
And that's we know these legendary coaches, a lot of them would love to coach until they die. Like Larry Brown, right? Once he got fired and he was coaching my friends when they were like in 10 years old in some JCC league. So these guys are addicted to coaching, but the reason he left college football was because of NIL and the transfer portal. So even with the GMs, and that's become more commonplace now, I don't see after 2 years where really not much has changed why he would want to come back outside of the fact that he's just addicted to it. And that's why I kept on saying, and he said it to the Pivot back in January, if he were to come back, it would be to the NFL, because if you're going to coach professionally and college is now professional, you may as well just do it in the NFL.
Absolutely. And I think you hit it on the head. He would get another NFL shot. I mean, he absolutely would. A team would hire him and give him a shot. But it's a grind. You know, it really, truly is. And I can't fathom Nick Saban saying, I want to get back in that grind. But maybe he has something to prove. You know, maybe the NFL, I guess, less than success is kind of eating at him. I don't know, but I'd be shocked if it's college. I would be blown away if it's college. NFL, though, I'll listen to it, and I think that there's a possibility, but it would really surprise me. I'm Greg McElroy, right? Right. Hey, there. I hear he might come back, but I'm not buying it right now. I would be blown away if it's college. Wouldn't surprise me. I'm like you if it's NFL.
You know, when we get to Texas, obviously the last 2 years, they've been really good, right? In a 14 playoff, they made it. 12-team playoff, they made it, and they were in the Final Four. And if Sark calls a better play, who knows how that game ends up against Ohio State. Now the Arch Manning hype, after all these years of just hearing about him, we, you know, barring good health, get to see him play from start to finish in a full season. At the end of the year, how do you think we're talking about Texas?
I like Arch a lot. I think that he's been given expectations that are unmeetable. And, you know, I go both ways on this. You know, I bristle whenever you have people saying he's the greatest quarterback since Tim Tebow. We had some pretty good quarterbacks between Tebow and now, right? Joe Burrow, Baker Mayfield was pretty special. You know, you've had some – I mean, look at Bryce Young and what he did the year he was starting at Alabama. You've got some pretty special dudes since then. But I get the hype. You know, if he's – and this is the common take, right? You hear it, Zach. If his name was Arch Jones, no one would be losing their mind. And I think most people that hear Arch Manning, they truly think that he's Peyton's son. They don't realize he's Cooper's son. I go back and forth. Because there's this part of me that says he couldn't get the job away from Quinn Ewers, who then went in the seventh round of the draft. But Quinn Ewers was also the highest rated recruit we've ever had in college football. They created a whole new level, like 5-star plus, to grade Quinn Ewers out. So I've kind of gone back and forth. You know, the moments he's had were against a bad Mississippi State and a UTSA, or Louisiana Monroe last year, came in against UTSA. We'll see. You know, we're going to find out quick because it's Ohio State, and Ohio State's still very good defensively. I'm a believer that he's good. I don't think that he is number one pick in the draft. I think these expectations that have been laid on him are unmeetable. And I think Texas is going to struggle a bit this year. It's a tougher schedule, a couple tougher road trips that are in there. That's not just the OU fan in me coming out. I'm looking at it as objectively as I can. Blown away by how they were able to consistently improved last year, even with everything that they lost. But when it came to the biggest stage against Georgia, in the moments that mattered the most, they couldn't get it done. Now, they were a bad call away from maybe going, and a bad coach's call away from maybe going to the championship game. But I think unrealistic expectations have been placed on this young man. And I'll tell you what, it wouldn't surprise me if he's back in college next year. It wouldn't surprise me at all if he's back at Texas. He's telling people now that he wants to come back for another year. We'll see if it pans out, but it wouldn't surprise me at all if he's playing at Texas again another season, 4 full years in college.
You know, I led the show with this today, Chris Plank, and I have all the respect for the SEC. Obviously, for years, they've been the best conference in college football. I think entering this season with the Big Ten having the last two national championships, winners, they could say that they're the best conference in college football, but it's going to be a game for the foreseeable future of tug of war between those two conferences. But the SEC this year, there's a lot of uncertainty, you know, when I look around it. And I started to show the three best teams to me in no order are Texas, Alabama, and Georgia, but even those three teams have uncertainty. So I'll ask you, who do you think is the best team in the SEC?
And what do all three of those teams have in common? They don't return a starting quarterback.
Yeah.
Which is wild, right? You got Ty Simpson that we think is going to be the guy at Alabama. Gunner, I just blanked on that Georgia quarterback. Thank you. Gunner Stockton. And then Arch, obviously, at Texas. And then the teams that have returning quarterbacks, right, like Lenore Sellers at South Carolina. You know, I'm listening to Shane Beamer talk today. And holy smokes, I mean, does he have a team that's coming back? Like, I see all the preseason hype, and Shane Beamer's laying out, we've never had this much – non-returning talent on the special teams, and we had to rebuild our line. I'm like, why in the world is this a top 20 team right now? Garrett Nussmeier is back, right? But you know, what are the weapons like around him? You know, they went and hit the portal hard for a couple of guys that didn't meet expectations at Oklahoma. So if I'm giving you my three best teams right now in the SEC heading in to 2024, I'll take the bait. You know, I'll give you Georgia. I think they've recruited well. I think they got a great level of talent. I think they're going to be really good. You know, I've got to go with the wave, right, and put Texas in there just because everyone else is, but I think they're going to struggle. And then I hate to do it because it's so homeristic, but I think Oklahoma's going to be really good, man. I really do. I think with John Mateer coming in at quarterback, Jay Nott at running back, it's a completely homeristic take, and you can call me out on it, but they're good defensively. Guys like R. Mason Thomas, you know, Kobe McKenzie comes in at backer now, replacing Danny Stutzman. And they got a guy in Eli Bone who I think has a chance to have a really special year at corner. But you can't count out Bama. You can't count out now Georgia. LSU, I think, is going to have something to say about it. And listen, if Florida can navigate the early schedule, they've got the talent. And I don't know if anyone went from being fired midseason to being a hero quicker than Billy Napier did. So you asked for three. I think I just gave you six. But that's how unknown I think it is right now in the SEC. And to me, it's wild because we're putting so much on teams that are bringing back guys that – haven't taken many college snaps at the quarterback position, and I think that's going to show itself early.
Yeah, and that's my skepticism with Florida, because you talked about the coach in Billy Napier. It's very tough. We've seen it before in college sports. People are out, then they get back in, and then usually the following year they're out. Like, look at Neil Brown at West Virginia. You know, we know the quarterback. That's why Napier is still there with the system, and they thought, okay, if you get rid of Napier, then you lose the quarterback. Mm-hmm. But this is go time for Florida. And not only that, you look at it now. You miss a 14 college football playoff and you're Florida, I'm not going to kill you. In a 12-team college football playoff, South Carolina, you better make it. LSU, you better make it. Florida, Oklahoma, those schools, they better make it this year.
Yeah, and it's not just, you know, 8-4. It's not 7-5. Whew, we got back in a bowl game and we were on the bubble. No, you got to get in. And these are fan bases in Gainesville that expect it. A College Station, right? I didn't even mention Texas A&M. They might have one of the more talented roster. Marcel Reed's back. But, yeah, you hit it on the head, Zach. You've got to go make the playoffs. You've got to be in that playoff mix if you're Billy Napier. And I say in the mix, you know, again, you got to get in. You can't be having South Carolina get in over you. You can't have an at-large like Penn State get in over you. Your resume's got to be strong enough, and you've got to be good enough to where it's not even a question that you're in on Selection Sunday.
We know that he plays golf a lot, but will he be playing golf full-time next year with Hugh Freeze? You think this is it for Hugh Freeze after this season?
Boy, what a funny story that was. How about Golf Digest getting in the middle of this? So if I came on with you last year, I probably was singing the praises of Jackson Arnold, and I still really believe in the kid. But everything that could work against Jackson Arnold worked against him last year. Oklahoma's receiver room was decimated by injuries. They had injuries that decimated their offensive line. So if they can, you know, and he was a really good offensive coach. No team was more unlucky than Auburn was last year, but. You know, last year at the end of SEC Media Days, I heard an interview with Hugh Freeze where they asked him about, you know, what's been your biggest struggle? And he joked and he's like, my handicap, my golf game. Well, obviously he fixed that in June this year. And I worry that if you're hitching your wagon to Jackson Arnold, I just don't know if that's going to be the recipe for success to save your job, because that's another one of those teams, Zach, that I don't think like an 8-4 is going to be good enough. I don't think a 7-5 is going to be good enough. I think you got to be 9-3 knocking on the door of the playoffs in order for fans to believe the direction you're going. Listen, they're unfair expectations. I know it. But we're talking about places where it has been, you know, this isn't year two. This isn't year three. We're talking about year four, year fives in some cases. And you got to go out and get it done. And donors want to see it. Money people want to see it. Fans want to see it. And I'll tell you what, I think Hugh Freeze, we might be able to get him as our fourth come next year if we end up in the if we end up needing one, because I just don't know how things are going to turn around for Auburn. They did a great job in the portal, though, man. They've got some explosive playmakers, but we'll see how Jackson Arnold matures, because he's the key to it all.
And last team I want to ask you about is Tennessee. I like Heupel a lot as a coach. It stinks what happened with Iamaliava, because he had a fine season last year. He wasn't great, but he showed some signs. And now he's at UCLA. Aguilar comes over from App State, UCLA, then to Tennessee. They lose Dylan Sampson as well to the NFL, who was awesome, not only for Tennessee, but all through the SEC last year. Do you have any expectations for Tennessee entering this season?
Well, I know the fans do, and they should, to be a playoff team, right? That's the bar. But they lost a lot. And, you know, the Iamaliava thing was just not that Nico was out there slinging it like we expected him to, but he was good. You know, now this idea that he just sucked and he was terrible blows my mind, and he was getting better and he was developing, I thought, under Josh Heupel. I couldn't believe that, the bailout on this was something to do with development, because I thought he was developing. So I think it hurts you. I think it hurts you a lot, but they still have talent. They've recruited well. And I'll tell you what, that make or break game for Tennessee is Oklahoma. And if Oklahoma goes in there and beats them, I think it's going to get real dicey for Josh Heupel this year. They beat Oklahoma and continue to roll and you know, protect their home field and win a few games. You know, they think, what, they got Georgia coming to Tennessee this year. I think they've got a chance to be pretty good, but, man, they lost a lot. And it's a lot that they lost to the National Football League. And it was a portal loss in the quarterback that you had counted on and you had recruited for so long and was the first real money guy. So I know the expectations are there for them to be a playoff team. I see a middle of the pack, maybe even struggling a little bit more in the SEC, but I'd love to see him surprise, because I think Josh Heupel is one of the coolest stories in coaching about everything that he's overcome after getting fired from his alma mater, working his way back up from Utah State to Missouri to Central Florida and now to Tennessee. But I think this is going to be a tough one in Knoxville this year.
Who's the quarterback you trust the most in the SEC entering this season?
That's Garrett Nussmeier, right?
My answer, and I don't love him. I kind of think he's – no. I'm not saying style of play, but a little Jackson Dart where you know he's good, but I don't right. think he's ever going to be great at the next level.
And I don't think he has the mobility of Jackson. You know, and this is another one of those guys that, you know, if you love the old school football, right, and by that I mean dudes that go to college, stay there for 4 years, don't enter the portal – you're rooting for a Garrett Nussmeier, right? This is a guy that you want to see go out and ball. But I don't know. You know, it's just Brian Kelly seems to always find a way to get crossways with the fans. And I could see that happening again. LSU has a rough schedule, a big one early in the season, but he's the guy that I would have to say I trust the most. And even though Lenore Sellers controlled his turnover problem, they did a good job protecting him last year. Now they've got to replace the interior of their offensive line at South Carolina. So I don't know when he starts getting pressured if he's going to make the mistakes he did early last season. So, yeah, I think Garrett Nussmeier, I think you and I would be unified on that, because, you know, it's not like it's a big drop off to talent at number two. There's more talented quarterbacks. But there's a guy that's been in the fire, that's fought, that understands the system, and he would be the guy that I would trust the most in this league right now.
So then off of that, at the end of the year, who do you think will be the best quarterback in the SEC?
John Mateer. No, I think Mateer is going to be really good. I think Lenore Sellers is going to be really, really good. But yeah, I guess I'll just – I think John Mateer is going to have a breakout year. And if he can handle things to the degree that he has off the field leading up to the season – Zach, you got to get the guy on. I mean, when it comes to kissing babies and it comes to being the politician and all the NIL stuff, it's Baker-esque. Now let's see if it works on the field. Listen, Oklahoma's got to stay healthy. It's wild how unhealthy they were last year and how much they lost. But if they can stay healthy, I think by the end of the year, people are going to be raving over John Mateer at Oklahoma.
Yeah, we'll have Mateer.
Very homeristic take, I know.
We'll have Mateer on the show anytime. Put in a good word for us at Oklahoma and get him on the show, all right?
I will, Zach.
Chris, thanks so much. This is great.
Yeah, buddy, anytime, man. You guys have a great rest of your show. Appreciate you having me on.
There you go. Chris Plank, one of the best in the business covering college football, previewing the SEC with us. We'll come on back. The Chicago Bears have extended Ryan Poles. What's the confidence level with the Bears entering this season? We'll do that on the other side.
We the people of the ballpark are all in on baseball. We deserve dingers and dogs, sunshine and a beat, a place to take it all in. And let it all out. Baseball for the people. Baseball is something else. Visit MLB.com/tickets and spend this summer with us. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Understanding power requires more than headlines. I'm Peter Hamby, host of The Powers That Be, a podcast from Puck examining politics, economics, and media to provide context, analysis, and clarity without sensationalism. We ask how power operates, who benefits, and what's at stake. If you want to move beyond breaking news to deeper understanding, join us on The Powers That Be. New episodes every weekday. Follow The Powers That Be wherever you get your podcasts.
So Ryan Poles, he got a contract extension from the Bears, and now his contract will sync up with Ben Johnson's contract, which is through the 2029 season. I think that's actually smart business by the Chicago Bears. even though Ryan Poles still has a lot to prove. But he has constructed a solid roster heading into this season. And something that the Bears haven't had in a long time is continuity, right? Even just look at this past year. Poles was there. Eberflus was there. You're bringing in Caleb Williams. Then Caleb Williams, after 1 year, sees the head coach get, you know, fired midway through the season, which was the right decision to get rid of Matt Eberflus. And then Ryan Poles is still there. And then if the Bears, let's say, underachieve this year, and let's say they go 8-9 and miss the postseason, then what are people going to be saying? Get rid of Ryan Poles. So then Caleb Williams will have a new general manager. Then Ben Johnson will be a year in. He'll have a new general manager. And who knows if the new GM that would be coming in would be able to work with the coach. So the Bears, whether the right three guys or not, the Bears have identified who their big three is moving forward. And I think that even though the contract's through 2029, they're really the trio of Caleb Williams, Ryan Poles, and Ben Johnson are really going to get 2 years with the three of them being together. That's what I think this move does. Even though it's through 2029, 2025, even if they underachieve this year, they're running it back next year with Caleb Williams, Ryan Poles, and Ben Johnson. And then they get one more season. And then at that rate, once you get through two more seasons, if Ryan Poles, even though you just extended him, because then we would be entering the 2027 season, if he hasn't built a winner by now, then he'll be out. And then Ben Johnson, right, that'd be 2 years in on the job. And then Caleb Williams would be his third year on the job. Then you have to start making decisions here. So I look at this, the trio of Ben Johnson, Ryan Poles, and Caleb Williams, these next 2 years, we're going to find out a lot. And then we'll see who ends up being the odd guy out. And the first guy that is going to go is going to be Ryan Poles, even though he just got this extension. But linking up and syncing up Poles and Ben Johnson, I think, is a smart thing to do. But now it's go time. And the Chicago Bears play in the tougher conference. The NFC is tougher than the AFC. The AFC may be more impressive at the top when you look at teams like the Chiefs, the Bills, and the Ravens. But from top to bottom, the NFC is better than the AFC. And not only that, the Bears are like, the Bears could go 9-8 this year. They go 10-7. They can miss the playoffs. Look how good the NFC North is. You got the Lions, bona fide Super Bowl contender. You got the Vikings. We'll see what happens with J.J. McCarthy, even though I'm a believer. Now, like, you look at that division, the Packers, obviously, they're always good. You could have a solid season, a good season, and you could improve off the year that you had last year, and you could still be a team on the outside looking in and not make the playoffs. Like the Bears last year, they were 5-12. We saw last year the Lions go 15-2, the Vikings go 14-3, the Packers go 11-6. So there's a chance that the Bears go 9-8, still miss the playoffs, and still be the fourth team in that division. So it does feel, and I know when you say so-and-so or bust, and you set an expectation or bust that if it's a bust, that you got to tear the whole thing down. That's not what I'm going at here, because I think Poles now with this extension's back next year. Ben Johnson's obviously not going to be one and done, and you're not going to move off of Caleb Williams after 2 years. But it does feel like it's playoff or bust for the Bears. But with that being said, I do wonder, like, Stu, if they go 9-8 this year and Caleb Williams plays well, are we going to be sitting here? Are we going to be trashing the Chicago Bears? So I think it's easy for me to say, yes, it's playoff or bust for the Bears. But then there's only 7 spots and 4 occupied by division winners. Do I think the Bears are winning the division? Hot take of the day? No, I do not. So, like, let's just say Eagles, Lions, Bucks, Rams are your 4 division winners. Then there's only 3 spots. You got to factor in the Commanders. You got to factor in the Vikings. You got to factor in the Packers. You got to factor in the Bears. You know, maybe Atlanta too. San Francisco. Even a Seattle. So there is a world this year where I have been saying for the majority of the playoffs are bust for the Bears. Playoffs are bust for the Bears. And I still feel like I want to say it. But there is a way that you could put lipstick on the pig still, even if you don't reach the goal of making the playoffs. So let's do this, Stu. And I know I've done this before, but things change right through certain points of the offseason. Give me the Chicago Bears schedule And I'll just go win or loss, and I'll see where that puts them in my mind.
All right, opening up against the Vikings at home, Monday Night Football.
I'm going to say that's a win.
Okay, at Detroit week two.
I'm going to say that's a loss.
Home against the Cowboys.
I'm going to say that's a win.
Okay, at the Raiders week four.
Win.
They have a bye week, and then they're at the Commanders on Monday Night Football.
And I lost that game last year on that Hail Mary. Remember that?
Right.
I'm going to say loss.
Home against the Saints.
Win.
At the Baltimore Ravens.
Loss.
At the Cincinnati Bengals.
I'll go win.
Home against the Giants.
Win.
At the Vikings.
I gave them a win earlier, so I'll go loss here.
Home against the Steelers.
Just because of Rodgers, I'm going to go loss there.
All right. At the Eagles on Black Friday.
Loss.
At the Packers.
They'll split with the Packers, so I'll give them a loss there.
Home against the Browns.
Win.
Home against the Packers.
Win.
At the 49ers.
I'm going to say it's a loss.
And then week 18, home against the Lions.
I think they could split, and maybe that game doesn't mean anything for the Lions, so I'll go win. And that's nine. I counted nine wins there. Now, maybe you could say, oh, they get another win on that schedule that you disagree, or you could say they get another loss. Like, they're right in that range of 8-10. I think the floor for that team, it's weird to say the floor for the Bears is just eight wins because we've seen it get uglier. Right, the Bears are one of those teams last year that people were all high and mighty on. They had five wins last year. That's a team to. I can't wait to see how we're talking about the Bears at the end of this year. And you know what? I think Marco will agree with this. Because Marco is not all about the hype and people talking. He wants to see results. He wants to see people have sustained success. This guy, Ben Johnson, he's already starting to annoy me. The head football coach. Coming on in, taking shots at the Packers on LaFleur. You know, taking shots at the tush push. I only want explosive plays. Well, I've seen the tush push lead to a lot of first downs and a lot of touchdowns. He is someone, when they've already have anointed him the bell of the ball. And I'm not rooting against Chicago because I actually want to see them be good. But I can root against Ben Johnson, which washes out a little bit.
I got to tell you, I'm a little surprised. If you're annoyed and I'm not, that's stunning.
Really?
He hasn't gotten to me yet.
Because you're usually the curmudgeon around here.
That's fair. No, that's very fair. And usually you're more into the enjoying of you know, people coming in, haven't done a damn thing, and all of a sudden starting to talk. I got no problem with Ben. Look.
You have changed, Marco.
Let's not put it that way.
I haven't worked with you in a long time. Now you're Mr. Happy-Go-Lucky, positive Marco Belletti.
That's probably false. Let's assume that the stuff at the Packers is almost like it's part of their DNA. If you take a Bears job, you have to take a shot at the Packers. Mm-hmm. I think they almost tell you that going to the press conference.
Yeah.
I think it's part of the PR. Stupid in my mind,
dumb.
But I think it's part of the PR. I think you have to take a shot at the Packers. Why? I don't know. You haven't done anything against the Packers in forever, but for some reason, every coach does it. So I feel like he was taught that, coached that, told that. So I'm going to let that slide. Everything else, I think he's just playing the part. So I haven't gotten annoyed with the boy genius quite yet.
Yeah.
Give it a couple of weeks. I'm sure I'll be right there with you. But right now, no.
And also, last year, right, everyone told him, take the Commander's job, take the Commander's job. He doesn't. And it was a shoo-in that he was going to take the Commander's job. Now, I didn't see. I thought the Commanders, right, had a gem in Jaden Daniels. I didn't know they would go from the outhouse to the penthouse in a matter of a year. But that decision even blew up in his face. And and if this year he goes like eight wins or so and the Commanders are in the postseason again, maybe he should have taken that job.
I guess. I think he was more, again, not putting
caught
words in his mouth.
In the Lions
stuff.
I
think it's just the ownership. I don't think it was the Lions stuff. I don't buy that. Unfinished business. Really? Is it finished now? So I don't buy that. That's garbage. That's people put that stuff afterwards when you did. I think he was concerned about ownership. He didn't know what it was going to be with Washington. Mm-hmm. So I think he was afraid to walk in.
It was better than the old owners.
Obviously, but you didn't know what it was. It was an unknown. And I think smart enough in the idea of a first job, I want to be a little bit more going into something where it's solidified and I know what I'm doing. Now, he took the Bears job.
Yeah, I was going to say, Mark.
So that was the part that it was kind of like, wait a minute. You're afraid of Washington because you don't know what it's going to be. Yeah. So you go to Chicago where you don't know who the hell's in charge. You honestly don't know who. Is it Poles? Who's in charge with the Bears? No one seems to know. So I think maybe, I'm hoping for his benefit, he feels like, well, I'm in charge. I walk in, I'm the guy. So maybe that's the reason why he won.
So let's just do this real quickly around the room. Just give me a yes or no. Do the Bears make the playoffs this year, Stu?
I say no.
Samter?
No.
Marco?
No.
I'm going to say no as well.
But you're telling me with a good season out of Caleb Williams, be that however way you want to grade
4,000-yard passer, whatever first time in franchise history.
Whatever you want to say. Mm-hmm. A good, solid season where everyone could look at it and go, he's on the uptick, he looked good this year.
Yeah.
And a 7-8 win season where they have some losses against playoff caliber teams, you can't tell me that they're not on the ascend.
So I'm going to revise my statement of playoffs or bust, which I've been saying for most of the offseason. They got to be at least 8 wins. I really think it's got to be an above 500 season. They got to be 9-8.
I disagree.
Bare minimum.
I think this has got to be, this is the eye test. This is Ben Johnson, Caleb Williams, the offense, this franchise moving in the right direction? Because we've been talking about this for who knows how long, and we've seen that they constantly spin their wheels. Are they moving in the right direction? You can get losses and look at it and go, this looks right. That's where they need to be.
And to basically make your argument look even more true, that's why you just extend the general manager and sync him up with the head coach through 2029, because if they didn't do that, and then let's say they had a season this year that was 7-10, and that's not this awesome season, people will still say, oh, fire the GM, but they're not going to fire the GM after extending him through 2029 the following season, in my opinion.
Fair. I wouldn't have done that. I still don't know who's in charge with the Bears, so I would let that play out a little bit. But I do think that this team is an old-fashioned, let my eyeballs look at it. Are they in every game? Mm-hmm. Are they prepared? Do they have the talent? Do they look like a team that in a couple of years can actually contend? We need to step back from the, you can do this right now, this year. You went from 4 wins, you can go to the Super Bowl. Slow down. Can this team in 2 years contend and be a playoff caliber, year in and year out type club? At the end of the year, if you say yes, then I think they're in the right direction.
All right, just one more yes, no. Will the Bears finish in last place this year in the NFC North, Stu?
No.
Samter?
Yes.
Marco?
Yes.
I think so, too. I trust the Packers more. I trust the Lions more. The Vikings are the iffy one. But I think McCarthy, with those weapons around him and the coach, I look what they did to Sam Darnold. Sam Darnold was a bum a year ago. So I still think the Bears have a season that's 8-9 wins, but they're still in the bottom of the NFC North.
I would even go so far as to say 6 or 7, but at the end of the year can still be looked at as a team that's rising. And that's not the way we live anymore, but I think they're an exception to the normal rule.
We will get to a news brief next. Update time first. Here is Marco Belletti.
Time for your daily news brief. We get you caught up on the rumors, reports, and reconnaissance from the day in sports.
Alrighty, news brief time. SEC media days are underway. Let's start off with the commish, Greg Sankey, on the criticism of the SEC conference schedule with only playing 8 SEC opponents a year.
It is absolutely, fully, 100% correct that in the SEC we play 8 conference games while some others play 9 conference games. Never been a secret. Second, it's also correct that last season all 16 members of the Southeastern Conference played at least 9 games against what you would label power opponents. We had several that played 10 of their 12 games against power opponents. Some conferences have that, some don't. The same will be true this year. In the SEC, we're not lacking for quality competition among our 16 football teams. But we're going to continue to evaluate whether increasing the number of conference football games is appropriate for us.
Here's what I would do. Because you have 12 teams in the college football playoff. You're eventually going to six. Nine SEC opponents. That's what I would do if I'm an SEC school, right? Nine SEC opponents, one up against the Big Ten, and then you could get two cupcakes. Like, I'm looking at the Oklahoma schedule, for example, because we had Chris Plank on. They play Illinois State in week one. Then they play Michigan week two. Okay, that accomplishes the Big Ten part. Then they're at Temple, another cupcake, and I say that as a TU alum. Then they play Auburn. Then they play Kent State. You have three cupcake games in your first, 5 weeks of the season? Then you play Texas, South Carolina, Ole Miss, Tennessee, Alabama, Missouri, and LSU. So, yeah, it's great from Texas and on. And sure, you get Michigan in the beginning. But I'm okay with two cupcakes. I don't need to see three cupcakes. So, nine SEC games, one Big Ten game. You have the Big Ten game. And you have two cupcakes. That's what I like to see. I think it'd be better for all college football fans, too. Here is Greg Sankey and the SEC changing their mind for the 60-team college football playoff. Remember, they wanted to do guaranteed spots. Then all their coaches talked about this 5-11 model and who the heck knows where we're at right now.
We had a different view coming out of Destin around the notion of allocations, if you will. The Big Ten has a different view. That's fine. We have a 12-team playoff, five conference champions. That could stay if we can't agree. I think there's this notion that there has to be some magic moment and something has to happen with expansion and it has to be forced. No, I think we want to use, when you're given authority, you want to be responsible in using that authority. And I think both of us are prepared to do so.
Let's just make a decision already. I'm sick of talking about the expansion to 16 and what it's going to look like. Clearly what the SEC wants is they want the strength of schedule to be viewed as a higher priority. That's what they really care about. Whether it's factored in with guaranteed spots or a 5-11 format, that is definitely a debate. But I think the big part for the SEC is they want strength of schedule to be taken into bigger consideration with the College Football Playoff Committee. Let's hear Greg McElroy and Mack and Kublik. That is his morning show on Jocks FM. He was talking to Paul Feinbaum. How about Saban returning to coaching?
Very much in the know person that I have a lot of respect for and have spent a lot of time around and just really, really admire. They seem to think Nick Saban's not done coaching. I had a similar reaction, but he's pretty adamant that he thinks Nick Saban will be coaching again. Do you buy that?
No.
That's what I said.
I don't think he'll be going back to college. If he is, I think it's going to be the NFL. My advice to him would be to stay at the ESPN. Just stay there. Stay at the ESPN. You've done everything that you need to. Let's hear Brian Kelly on the importance of the opening game. You have LSU open up the season with the Tiger family of LSU up against the Clemson Tiger family.
We open up with a great program in Clemson. We've also been 0-3 in openers at LSU under my watch. And we needed to do some things differently this year. And that is embrace this opener and embracing it in a manner that this is a big game and it's a tangible goal for our football team to want to be 1-0. It's not let's warm it up into the season. We want to be ready for this football game.
And let's hear from Kalen DeBoer on who's in the lead spot right now to be your team starting quarterback.
You mentioned Ty Simpson and we've made it known that if we played a game at the end of the spring, even right now, because it really wouldn't change, we would have Ty as our quarterback. Mm-hmm. But they're all competing for the spot. Ty's been around now. He's seen it. He's competed and has all the tools, just like these other guys. He has all the tools to go out there and get the job done. And he's done a really nice job of improving and looking forward to this opportunity that he's waited a long time for.
And Alabama opens up with the fun game up against Florida State. You may remember that just because of the comments by Thomas Castellanos where he said he doesn't fear Alabama and they're not the same without Nick Saban. And he doesn't see how there's any way that Kalen DeBoer's defense is going to be able to slow him down. So I say take Alabama, lay the points with them, and roll Tide. I'm sure that's going to backfire for Thomas Castellanos come week one. Alrighty, it is the Zach Gelb Show right here on the Infinity Sports Network. We will take a break. When we come on back, we're going right back into the SEC. We will talk about a player, a coach, and a team that you're curious about going into this season of 2025 college football in the SEC. You'll hear from Stu, you'll hear from Samter, and obviously you will hear from yours truly after these short messages.
Did you know that there are over 200 legends like Andrew Jones, Albert Pujols, Felix Hernandez, and Ken Griffey Jr. in MLB The Show 26? Collect them all and current all-stars to build your perfect lineup. MLB The Show 26 is available now on PlayStation 5, Xbox Series XS, and Nintendo Switch. Rated E for everyone. Officially licensed by MLB Players, Inc.
It is not hard to destroy a college. Last season, the podcast Campus Files brought you stories of fraternity drug rings, stolen body parts, campus cults, and more.
And now Campus Files is back for another season.
There's a guy screaming into his phone. He's like, I just saw Charlie Kirk get assassinated right in front of me.
Every week is a new episode and a new story.
It was so chaotic.
It's almost like a university under siege.
Listen to and follow Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.